time to cast off on a new adventure. This is Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Hello and welcome to Real Adventures from wherever you're listening right around the country. Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hapgood joining you this morning to talk all things fishing, boating and the great outdoors. Good morning to you, Redmond.
Good morning, Patrick. A bit of a miserable week of weather a couple of days in there, hasn't it? A bit of winter showing its face.
Aries Inlet, my hometown, 116 mil of rain overnight.
Yeah, that's a lot of water.
It was unbelievable.
And I was driving to your place during the week. I'd pass Spring Creek River or Creek, yep. Spring Creek. And yep. It was actually only overflowing onto the road to get across to Torquay.
Was it
really?
It
was right up to the top of it, the edge there.
It's been unbelievable. But you know what it did produce back end of the week? Once all the sort of local rivers right up and down the surf coast had flooded, it took a couple of days, but then they went off when it came to the fishing, because obviously freshwater floods in, stirs everything up, most of the creeks and rivers burst their banks. Give it a couple of days to settle down. All those nutrients that are now in the water, even though the water levels are a lot lower, really stimulates the fishing. There's been some phenomenal brim catches. There's actually been some estuary perch as well that have been caught at and ran through rivers, which are a bit of a rare sort of find along the surf coast, but that's really stimulated the local fishery, and it's been sensational.
It hasn't
necessarily been great offshore, Redmond, with how crazy the weather's been, but onshore, those rivers, they're definitely worth targeting, particularly if you want to get into brim at the moment.
Your dad reckons he's got the perch worked out in his little Pankalac River that he stocked him in a few years ago.
Pankalac Creek. Well, for him, that's like one of those fish that are really hard to catch, and there's something special about it. So it is, there's no doubt it's an impressive and important catch for him, but everyone has their own sort of, you know, things that they like to fish for. What about your week in fishing?
Yeah, so that, like you said, we had a couple of miserable days in there, but before those days and just after those days, we had some beautiful days. So, like I said, those big onshore winds, that smashed the coast, put some dirty water in close, and once again, the fishing was red hot. The snapper fished really, really well. The snapper, they say they come out of the bay and move down back to sort of towards that South Australia. And offshore Bowen Heads, we've seen a lack of snapper captures over the past few months. We had that really good run early, and you can see cross-country charters, who Zach and Chris Vasileski from Gone Fishing Charters, both working out of Queenscliff, guests of the show, regular Patrick, and they caught some seriously good snapper over the few months ago. Then they had that real quiet spot on them, and Zach drew, I think, the last four or five trips, he's bagged his whole boat out on the snapper right up to 6 kilos. So some beautiful fish being caught offshore.
How are they targeting it? Like, are you heading off, are you working around tides? Are you heading dawn and dusk? What would you recommend for those that are interested in targeting snapper? Even though different stages have been spasmodic at the moment, they seem to be fishing well. What's the best chance of giving yourself a good chance to catch it?
Yeah, so I've recreational and commercial charter boats and whatnot need to fish differently. So you got to think, Zach and Chris, they might have onwards of 8 to 12 people on their boats. So they need to cater for each person to fish. So they set their boats up on a drift, and they drift their reefs and their wrecks that are offshore. So they're drifting side on to the wind, which slows them down by drifting side on. Quite often, there's a little bit of wind, they'll have their big shootout. So their big drogue, whatever you want to call it. There's so many names for it. Sea anchor. They have it out the back, and that will slow their, sorry, out the side, and that'll slow their drift down even that little bit more. So they hold on that bite the school of fish as such, for a bit longer. So they're fishing drifting methods with heavy sinkers. They might be using 6 to 10 ounce sinkers at times with a bit of squid, paternoster rig or extended paternoster rig. Where as a wreck angler, for me, it's a little bit different. I'm not into the so-called drifting across. They get a lot of those pinkies, which is nothing wrong with the pinkies. They have a great time, the charter guys and the punters on there. But I'm trying to target that sort of 4 to 8 kilo as in, and try and avoid the pinkies. So I'm fishing off those reefs a little bit, and I'm burling the bottom for the snapper in the ocean, and I'm waiting for them to come to me.
Because you often talk about if you just hit reef and then you burly hard, you are going to spend most of your time getting rid of
rubbish
all manner
fish.
Of reef fish.
Yeah, just constant. And you just can't fish. It just gets too hard. But drifting the reefs a little bit, when you hit the patches of snapper, and the boys prove it, they do really, really well. And they get a massive feed of snapper for their punters. And also, like I said, on anchor for the wreck, for myself, it's a little bit different. I'll anchor up and set my trap up on the reef, and I'll wait for the fish to come to us. And we are approaching gummy shark season, as I like to call it. And What I mean by that is the gummy sharks. It's not.
Do you say gummy shark season because people have all of a sudden the tuna have died off a bit, so people aren't fishing for them as much. It hasn't been
snapper died
a great month for snapper, whereas there's always gummy sharks there, and it's just putting the time into them. But people, which is human nature, get bored of different sort of fish to chase, and it's back onto gummy sharks because they're a bit of a staple around the region.
Well, that you're spot on. That's exactly what I was going to say, is the fact that they get left behind a little bit. So you got, like you said, the snapper. So you get your big run of squid at the start of the year. Then all of a sudden the snapper come on. Then the kingfish come on. And then these tuna are on nice and hard as well. And then the swordfish are on. Then the barrel tuna come on. And they sort of get left behind at times, where in winter you take away 60% of that stuff.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you've got a fishery that has been there the whole time, but no one's been targeting. So you get your odd people that target them. But like I said, you get distracted with other options, which I don't know why, because they're on... Out of that list I said, they're in the top couple for myself to eat. So gummies are bloody nice to eat. So they are there, and they are in good numbers. And coming into winter, we're going to start to see the seven gills move in as well, as that water gets a little bit colder. So my week in fishing has been fantastic, and it's been fantastic for a lot of other anglers too, Pat.
Speaking of which, the swordfish at the moment we've seen caught up and down the eastern seaboard in really big numbers. It's been a little bit harder this week, given the weather, but clearly winter, when we see less consistent sort of heavy winds, is a better time to chase swordfish. The secrets to it, obviously, you've actually got to spend time out on the water. You can't just pack up your things and go spend a day, and then that's your effort for swordfish for the year.
They're, like I said, the ultimate fish, and we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago. You need to make a plan. You can't just go down there for 10 minutes and try and catch one. It's enough fuel in your boat. It's having reliable engines, getting them serviced, and then heading out kilometres. When I say kilometres, onwards of 100 at times.
What's the closest place to launch and fish for swordfish?
Lake's entrance is about 80 kilometres to get you towards them, roughly.
Yep. So 80 clicks offshore.
80 kilometres, and that's starting. Like, that's a starting point. So, and also Eden and the likes is probably a little bit closer as well, but there's so many different areas to target them in canyons. And like I said, I'm not an expert in this field, as in I haven't gone there and chased them. It's a big effort. And like I said, this is work for me. Remember, I've spoke about this numerous times, I've got to keep catching fish. And I haven't had much interest in them as such. I've done them a couple of times, but I haven't had a massive interest in it, where right now I have a massive interest in it. I'm so close to, I go away next week to Queensland with the family, then I'm going to be straight into the swords when I get back, that's for sure. But you've got to head out there and spend the time, find the feed. You've got to get your baits down. It's about getting your sinkers down as well. You got to set your... It's not going to drop a bait over the side, Pat.
It's 500 metres.
You need to... Exactly.
Half a kilometre.
So you got to have light leader that attaches to your brick, for instance, and then that attaches to your hook, and then that attaches to your 25 lights that are on your rod. Then all that has to go in smoothly and not tangle for 500 metres down. So it's not something you just flick the bail arm over and drop and hope. It's actually, you got to put time and effort into getting this right, and some massive fish are being caught, swordfish.
So when it comes to preparing for them, like obviously the weather is one thing. You're traveling so far offshore, that's a really important factor in making sure you get home safely. But as you said, you've got so many different bits and pieces that you actually are putting to the bottom of the ocean. You can't be fishing when there's a huge amount of drift and rip out there, obviously, because there's so much movement and so much has to go right in order for you to, your line with your brick and your bait and everything else that you're putting down there to go smoothly.
And you got to understand that you're in the ocean on the continental shelf, past the continental shelf. So you gotta realize there's ocean currents, not just wind. You're competing against currents, and then you've got wind on top of that if there is a little bit of wind. And 5 to 10 knots out there can be a pain on the backside. Yep. 10 knots of wind, 100 kilometres offshore. It can be, if it's coming from the other way, it can, from an onshore breeze, that can be, it's not much, don't get me wrong, it's not much, but you're a long way out and you need to try and stay on the spot. You're trying to keep your baits at depth. And that comes down to the methods that you're going to fish. And I spoke to Al McGlashan a little while ago, and he said, depending on the current is how his baits sit. So Al McGlashan was saying when there's no current, they tend to try and break the brick off or the weight as such, let the bait float up. Where if the current's roaring, they need the bait to stay down rather than just float up. They need to get that bait where the bite zone is. So you can't, you got to allow for all these things, and you got to watch your GPS of how fast the current is. Ripcharts is another fantastic app you can buy. I think $200 a year, I think it is. You can buy it, and that gives you an idea, a starting point of where the currents are going to be. So it's definitely well worth putting the effort and study into this before you go and waste. When I say waste a lot of money, it's not wasting. Using that money to learn along the way you go. So that's the best way to give you an example of how much it's going to cost you, because you got fuel in the car, fuel in the boat. The lights aren't cheap. They're a lot of money, the lights, to do it. Plus you've got all your braid on your reel. You've got hundreds and hundreds of meter of braid. Then you've got your leader as well, your 100 meters of top shot as such. Then you've got these massive big hooks. And then you've got to buy the bait or catch the bait, which you might have done, which costs fuel. So it's not a cheap exercise. It's not like going out on the whiting for 10 minutes. So you need to, but the thing is, you do need to learn, and spending the time is the only way that you're gonna learn to do it. So
Kingfish at Mallacoota won't stop, Aaron. They're fishing incredibly well and fishing to well over a metre. Live baits and jigs fishing really well at the moment, and the way that you would be targeting them if you were head out.
Yeah, we're going to... I would like to have head down there a few weeks ago when they were going red hot. And in saying that, they're still going red hot at the moment. And if you can get some yakkers, some live squid, and drop it down to them, that's how you tend to get your bigger fish as such. Jigs are going to work. You might get a metre 20 fish on a jig, like there's no reason you won't. It's just more to the point that the live baits tend to get the bigger fish. And just be mindful as well, in the afternoon, if you've got a nice still day, they are coming up to the top. So you can actually use your surface lures, like your bungee casts and whatever, whatnot, casting at these fish and landing and having top water fun on these kingfish. And they're pretty much all oversized, right up to, like I said, over a meter at times. So Gwayne was down there a couple of weeks ago, or not even a week ago. I think he landed 20-plus fish in a few hours session. So it's fishing really, really well at the moment.
Portland and Port Mac, the barrel fishing at the moment?
Yeah, it's hit a wall over that full moon that's just gone by, and now obviously the weather that we've had. So they're there. They are there.
Would you be spending your time chasing them right now?
I'm nearly a yes.
So they haven't been fishing well.
No.
Off the back of the moon, the weather's been poor.
That's the reason there why I would be going, because over that full moon period, you tend to find that they feed overnight. That's what that you speak to longliners up the commercial coast.
Yep.
And then rough weather, which means that it's stirring the ocean up. Everything's getting stirred up, and I love fishing them after a bit of a blow. And then you've also got this time of the year. You're coming into prime barrel season. June is going to be even better. So I would nearly be ready to go. I was actually going to go last week, but then I realized the moon was coming, so I didn't go.
Yep.
And I'm glad I didn't, because the fish didn't feed. So it's well worth contemplating having a look for a barrel tuna now at Portland, Port McDonald, or even in Polo Bay. But the charter boats made their annual run down to Portland the last couple of weeks, and we spoke to Chris O a few weeks ago on the show. And if you do want to listen to any of our shows, make sure you download the Real Adventures app, because we've got all our podcasts and whatnot on there. Plenty of recipes on there too, Patrick, if you want to cook some fish that I give to you. But the annual tuna app, Portland Charter Boat Run, and like you've got so many charters from Melbourne and around the state that head down there to chase. Majority of them chase the schoolfish, but a lot of them also do the barrel bluefin too. So when they're there. So we actually might get Simon Rinaldi from Red Hot Charters on again in a few weeks' time and see what's actually biting there. Pat, it was a great chat with him last time, so we might get him on. But the school tuna aren't in close at the moment. They are at Port McDonald. So they are, and that's a good sign for fish to come, because our fish tend to come from that way. You can monitor them as they move down towards us, towards Portland. So the fish at the moment they're catching are bloody small. They're small. They're only talking like 6 to 12 kilo at the biggest, and they are on the shelf. So they're 30-plus Ks on the horseshoe, as it's called. Not many. There are a few fish in close, but majority, all the charter boats are heading out to the shelf. Chris Vasileski from Gone Fishing Charters, I spoke to him during the week. They were at the shelf. So if you are after a school bluefin at the minute, be prepared to do some kilometres and travel to the shelf.
We've got a massive show of Real Adventures coming your way. We're catching up with Dan Mackerel, and he's going to talk to us about the secrets of chasing brim. As we said off the top of the show, given the huge amount of water movement right around the state, of Victoria at the moment, it's a really good time if you're living within the state to get out and chase these brim. After the break, we've got the social club, but we're going to have a bit of a whip around the country and see what's biting right around Australia.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. Before we get to the social club, we're going to have a little bit of a look around the country. The Barra Nationals, Aaron, 2 years ago. Now, last year it was postponed due to COVID-19 along with plenty else. And the year before that was one of the toughest years for fishing that they've had. This year, things have changed.
It has. It's been fishing red hot. And I know a couple of locals reckon it has been, they've seen more fish caught in the last couple of days than ever before in this competition, which has been running for quite a period of time. With a few fish over that magic number, Patrick, that magic meter mark, which I think is the story behind your little fish that you lost from your dad netting a barramundi the wrong way, I think. Is that soft spot I've just hit?
Yeah, for those at home that ever plan on going barra fishing, you always net the fish from behind, not from in front, because they can see the net coming. This was going back sort of 15 years. I still think about it to this day. Hooked up on a barra that was pushing the meter mark. Dad tried to net it, and I swear he just belted the crap out of it. Lost it, and I didn't speak to him for a couple of days, I don't think.
Yeah, I reckon he might have meant it too.
Killer.
Poor John Boy.
Killer. But fishing really well.
It is.
It's a challenging comp at times because there are so many people that fish in it, Aaron. So the key is obviously to know your spots, to do your research before the comp itself, so you can try and find a place to fish where no one else is going. But it's a great opportunity for anglers to get involved in the spirit of fishing. There's a lot of girls and women fishing in it, which is what it's all about, being inclusive as possible, which is great to see as well.
It is, and we should try and do it next year. But let's just forget footy for a couple of weeks.
Well, we could go.
Well, actually, the way you're going at the moment, if we get half of you on the ground for next year, we'll still be able to do 2 weeks up there.
Coffin Bay, the fishing is red hot at the moment.
It is.
And we're seeing some huge Sampson fish. Now, you've travelled over there before targeting these specifically, and they're in really good size at the moment.
There is. There's a couple of charter boats doing the liverboards out there, Pat, which you go out for a few days. And if I could recommend it, It's got to be on your to-do list. Amazing. I didn't do it going on a charter. I was fortunate enough to go with a fella that knows the area extremely well. But it's something you got to do. Like, it's just fascinating fishing. Like, you're out wide, you've got trevally, and I'm not exaggerating here, 5-6 kilo trevally. You're swimming around the boat, and you're doing your best not to catch them because there's other stuff to catch, like Sampson fish and big kingfish and makos, and there's bluefin around myself, and this was exactly the same time a few years ago when I did it. So they're going to be there again now. And some of the kingfish are pushing well over the 20-plus kilo mark, which everyone goes to New Zealand for these monster kings, which I know they're not 50 kilo like they catch in New Zealand, but a 20-plus king is bloody big. It's a good fish. So it's Coffin Bay. If you're looking for a little holiday, cross the border and go get yourself a couple of kingfish and a couple of big Sampson fish.
We spoke to our mates at SA Angler, and the piers and jetties right around South Australia are producing really good calamari at the moment. Now, SA is known for great squid fishing. And if you're looking to get your kids into fishing, now is the time, because it's not shooting fish in a barrel, but it's pretty close.
Yeah, it is. And like you said, the piers, it's all coming down to your piers fishing, which is great to see. And
jetties, mate. South Australia, jetties.
Planks of wood.
Jetties.
Jetties. Is that actually legit?
Absolutely.
So they're not called piers over there?
No. Henley Beach jetty, Range jetty.
Quillensdale Pier.
Brighton jetty.
The jetty at Ocean Grove.
No, it's just every state does it differently.
Make sure you're using your jigs correctly over there in South Oz. It's same as anywhere, and especially land based, because if you're off your jetty, you got to make sure that you have it sinking. It's hard to go land based fishing and understand currents if you haven't been there before and what jigs to have. So it's be mindful. Don't stress about the colours too much. Worry about having a range of sizes from a 2 right up to a 3.5. Because if you're off a jetty and you see a nice bit of weed only in a couple of metres of water, it's because you're not moving and there might not be as much current in there. You don't want to use a 3.5 jig there because it will hit the bottom and you might see 10 squid sitting on that patch of weed. So get a size 2.0 on there, get it in there, and it'll have a slower sinking rate rather than racing to the bottom or floating. And it's going to work perfectly. Where if you push out further to the end of a jetty or a pier, when you cast out, you might have tide or current there and it might be the same depth, 2 meters, but the current's running so fast that it actually takes your jig well past you on a drifting angle. So you want to get your jig up in front and allow it to sink. So don't necessarily worry about the colours. Let's worry about having the right sizes for an area before you do colours. On Montague Island, Patrick, in New South Wales right now, The kingfish are going red hot, seriously red hot. Kingfish are turning on, and they're huge numbers of kingfish, and they're feeding throughout the day, which throughout the day is that's for them to feed. Usually they have bite times where they're actually feeding throughout the day. You don't have to get up at 5 in the morning to be
there. So that's unusual for you when you hear the reports around this.
It is. It's like you can have them times, but times where they'll feed all day and whatnot, but a lot of the time they will feed to sort of, oh, here's an example. I was at Port Welsh Pool a couple months back now, I think it was end of January, and we had a great kingfish bite, well over 25 kings. We landed in the morning right up to sort of that 10, 11 o'clock, and then they shut down, and they didn't go for the rest of the day. The next day, they did the same thing. As many fish there, and you could still mark them up, but you couldn't catch them. They just shut down.
Yep.
So for them to be feeding throughout the whole day is pretty bloody cool. And also in the afternoon they're coming up on the saris. So saris are a bait that tends to hold the surface, and they actually jump out of the water. So a good thing with that is when the kingfish are on them, other than the fact that they move quite fast because the saris move quite fast, if you can get in front of them and you can get a surface stick bait or a subsurface lure in front of them, quite often you're gonna catch them quite easily on the surface rather than being difficult on the surface.
Spectacular way of fishing as well.
Oh, it's as much fun as you can get. So, the Montu Islands fishing well, and the fish are over a metre too. So you can get them on jigs and live bait, but yeah, and they're up over a metre, some of the fish, which is a really good signs for the coming months for Montu Island.
Detroit River.
Now, we're going to skip the country for a bit because we're going to head over to Detroit. It's a 240-year-old sturgeon, I think it's how you pronounce it, sturgeon fish caught in the Detroit River, which is around 100 years old, which was nearly 7 foot long, and it was released, Pat. It was released.
Is it a 240-year-old sturgeon, or is it a 100 years old and was nearly 7 feet long?
Okay, I've edited it on my page, not your page that you've got in front of you, so I did make a spelling mistake, so we're going to do that again.
The Detroit River, Aaron.
Yes, the Detroit River. It had a monster fish caught there during the week, a 240-kilo sturgeon, which caught in the Detroit River, as you said, likely to be around 100 years old, which was nearly 7 foot long. It was just under 7 foot. And the good news is it's actually been put back to grow for another 100 years because it got released.
Like a dinosaur, aren't they?
They reckon it's prehistoric. It's a quick photo and chucked it back, which is fascinating, instead of weighing it in. But they reckon... yeah, it's a big fish.
Let's get to the social club where we take your questions from social media. If you've got a question for Aaron or I, make sure you send it into our Real Adventures socials, or better yet, download our Real Adventures app. First question is for you, Aaron. What size sinker do you often use when you're fishing for whiting?
That's a good question, but it's also a question I can't necessarily answer for you an exact answer. What I mean by that is...
you're talking about conditions.
Yeah, everything comes down to where you're fishing, the conditions you're fishing. But the key is the whiting feed. So you look at a whiting bat and the shape that its head sits at. It sits with its head, with its mouth... mouth favours its under jaw rather than straight on.
Yep.
So
it's burrowing underneath the surface.
Yes.
Or, you know, in the sand.
Pushing into the sand. So basically, what you need to do is put your bait in that vicinity so it can drive that bait into the sand to feed so you can get your hook up. So what I'm trying to say is you need to hold bottom. There's no point in having your bait up off the bottom. So you need your sinker to hold. And how you do that is when you cast out, especially if you're fishing tidal areas, don't just cast your rod out and let it go and then just let the line come off the bail arm, because that's just not going to work, because it'll keep coming out. Your line will keep coming out because your tide's actually going to keep pulling the line, and naturally will put a big bow on your line and keep pulling that line out. So when you cast out, as it hits the water, just tether the line, tap the line with your hand on your spool or even just on your rod tip a little bit until it hits the bottom. You'll feel it hit the bottom, flick your bail arm over, and then all I want you to do is lift your rod towards basically 12 o'clock straight up in the air, and then drop it back down. And before you get back to your strike spot where you sit your rod getting ready for a fish, you should feel the sinker hit the bottom, and it will take the weight off your line for that period of time. So
as you bring it down from 12 o'clock,
yep.
Are you keeping tension in the line the whole time?
Yep, until I feel it hit.
You can really feel it. So that's an important point versus just lifting up and then just waiting and dropping it straight down. You've got to feel the line.
Control the drop down with the weight of the rod, And as it hits, you'll feel it hit, and that should hit just before your strike zone where you're going to stand there and have your rod ready to strike. And like I said before, with your sinker sizes, it completely varies. If you're at Clifton Springs or in a non-tidal area, I'd just be using not even a 1 ounce. Where if you're at Queenscliff fishing in a strong tide, I might be. Well, the other day I was using a 4 ounce. Where at St. Leonard's, I was using a 2 ounce because we had big tides. So you just need to, I like to be slightly heavier than lighter because I reckon when that sinker hits the ground, it makes it, a bass yabby, when it, you go, or not a bass, if you go diving, for instance, and you see a worm, which I see all the time when diving for scallops and whatnot, you see a worm, you might see it on the surface, and you go over to it, then all of a sudden, and just a big puff of sand comes out. And I believe by moving that sinker onto the bottom will create so many bites, it's crazy. So if you're standing there with your rod, just lift it up every 15 seconds, just let the sinker hit that sand. And that's why I say use a slightly bigger sinker than you need, because you get to really puff up that sand when it hits the ground. And when that does that, it obviously has to cause stuff to come see what's going on. Then all of a sudden, your bit of squid's hanging off the back of that area where it is, and then you get the bite. So it definitely works to get a hook up.
Next question is from Levi. Hi, fellas. I'm thinking of targeting mulloway in Nelson this season coming, or I'm assuming at the moment. Any tips you can help me out with fishing for mulloway in Nelson? Cheers, boys. Beautiful spot. One of the great places to go and visit. And isn't all that... It's popular, but in a way it's almost... There's so many wonderful places around Australia. It sort of gets forgotten at times. It's a phenomenal fishery.
Yeah, it's one of the... And we're going to have Dan Mackerel on after the break. I think it's straight after this break, if I'm correct. And Dan's going to join us. He actually had a brim tournament in Nelson. So we're going to ask him a couple of questions. We'll know exactly what's going on there in a few minutes. So stay tuned after the break. But the mulloway season is pretty much kicking off in the Nelson as we speak. So it's about to get red hot. So there's a few fish being caught, and it's going to get better and better as the colder months come. Fresh bait. Bring some fresh squid up if you don't have any. Even in the rivers, catch your live little salmon and your mullet and whatnot. They're going to work well. Even if you go out offshore, for instance, chasing a tuna that day at Portland, if you can catch a few slimy mackerel and have slimy mackerel fillets, strip baits, and you basically run, I like to run them as a bait, I'll call it the Western Port rig, a running rig, and getting the sinker as light as possible for the current that's actually working through the river. So that there, get your baits on the bottom once again, and set a nice spread like you're fishing the snapper in Western Port, and you're going to find yourself catching well over a metre plus mulloway.
Good on you, Levi. You've won yourself a Real Brand fishing top and hat. We're giving away one every week for the next couple of months. The best question every week in the social club wins it. You've won it this week, Levi. Send us a direct message and we'll have it sent straight out to you. Plenty more coming up after the break. Dan Mackerel joins us to chat through the secrets of chasing monster brim.
All aboard for Dometic. Everything you need for adventures, big or small. Mobile living made easy. Dometic.
It's time for All Aboard for Dometic. Everything you need for adventures, big or small. Dometic mobile living made easy. Our special guest on Real Adventures this morning is Frogley's offshore pro angler, Dan Mackerel. Good morning, Dan. Welcome to Real Adventures.
Morning, boys. How's things today?
Going not too bad, Dan. And I know last week, like you said, you're with the Frogleys offshore and competitions got postponed because of COVID over the last 12 months as such. And you're back into tournaments now, and you had one at Nelson during last weekend. How'd you go?
Yeah, no, it was good to get back into it, especially having two young kids now. Sort of fishing time's been limited, so it was nice to get away for 4 days over there.
How old are they, Dan, before we get into the tournament?
I've got one just turned 3 and the other one's near 12 weeks. So, yeah.
Well, 12 weeks are a little bit away, but 3, I reckon once you get to 3, you can start to get the kids out on the boat and they start to enjoy a bit more. That's been my experience with George.
No, that's good. He's certainly adapted to wearing the life jacket now, so the next step will be actually getting on the water and doing that. So, looking forward to it.
Extra 20 widening, if you ask me. Take us through the tournament, Dan. How did you go and what goes into actually getting prepared for a tournament?
Yeah, no, so I suppose these comps away, you get the day before, so the Friday you get over there is actually a pre-fish day, so you go over and sort of have a look around the system and try and work out or put a bit of a plan together of what you're going to do for the coming two tournament days. So given that the Glenelg River's about 50 kilometres long, there's a lot of water to cover, so Betsy and myself sort of covered the top end for the first half of the morning and then the bottom end for the rest of the day. So for that, for us, it was quite good. We caught a lot of estuary perch in the morning up top and a few brim, so that sort of worked out. We don't need to spend too much time up there. And then with the incoming tides in the afternoon, it was pretty good fishing down the bottom. So that was enough for us to say, right, we don't have to do too much travelling. We're just going to spend our time down there and sort of chip away. It's always a busy little place, the estuary, on the comp days. It's quite a small area, and after that 20 boats into one area, it sort of makes it a little bit lean pickings. But if you put the time and effort in, the results can come. So,
what size of the brim that you're targeting to do with the competition? Like, is it, how do you win? Is it over most fish you catch in the day, or is it kilo on weight, kilos over a number of fish you're allowed to have in the live bait tank? How does it work?
Yeah, so it works on, so it's just an upgrade system. So you weigh your best five fish each day, and then minimum length is just dependent on what the legal size. And I think legal size for the brim is a 29-centimetre model. And I think we sort of weighed 3.7 kilo on the first day and 3.35 on the second, which put us in fifth place. So it's a serviceable result.
And when we're talking those bigger fish, Dan, brim are one of those fascinating fish for those that don't understand sort of growth rates. You catch a 35-40-centimetre brim that could well be far older than a sailfish you catch that's, you know, 7.5, 8 foot long. That's what amazed me once I sort of started to learn a bit more about these fish, that you can get really old fish. And one of the great things about the tournaments, what they really promote, is the sustainability of fishing. You put them in the live bait tank, you weigh them, you bring them in, and then they're released at the end of it. So the sustainability of it is really strong, and it's something that's really heavily promoted.
Yeah, absolutely spot on there. They are certainly a slow-growing fish, an aging fish. So, look, a fish that might be, yeah, you're right, 38, 40 centimetres long could be the same age, so 38 to 40 years old. So they sort of fly along to about 20, 25-centimetre range, and then they grow very, very slowly after that. So,
when you approach a tournament, how do you go with using, I guess, the tackle? What do you go there with, plastics, or do you go there with vibes? Do you have a range of things, or does the pre-fish determine that?
Yeah, you'd probably be mind-blown, I think, if you saw how much we actually take to a brim comp. Most people laugh when you've got five or six different rods rigged up on the front of your deck, and that's per person. So you can only obviously use one at one time. But, again, because you're sort of junk fish the areas, you might be fishing shallow at one stage, you might be moving deeper. Obviously, tidal influences will change, different presentations are running. So to have as many things or bases covered and organised sort of saves time on the day. So the more time spent fishing and less time rigging, it's just one of those little 1%ers that can sort of put results in your favour.
A common bycatch in the Nelson or the Glenelg River is obviously mulloway. Was there many mulloway caught? And if so, how do you target mulloway with casting techniques?
Yeah, there was actually, again, Glenelg's obviously synonymous for a very high population of mulloway, and this weekend was no exception. Again, a lot of the guys reported either hooking and losing or landing, caught a few fish, so... I think just given the fact, like, elephants do eat peanuts, a lot of the people are fishing sort of small little presentations for brim, and we're doing it for years and years. You'll sort of mulloway aren't that much of an incidental capture. They're pretty easy to find on your sounder, especially in the Glenelg. There's certainly a few hotspots that they sort of congregate and can hold in. It's just a matter of being there when the switch fires for them to start chewing, and then it's actually a bit of a pain when you come across those in the brim comp because they can take up a bit of your time chasing those guys around.
Dan, on your Facebook, you've got a great chat with Greg from Doc Lures, and you talk about chasing mulloway on the Glenelg River. It's a fascinating listen if you're interested in getting into lure fishing. Is it something that you've really got to put time into? Because it's the techniques of how quickly you cast and retrieve, your patience to fish in one particular area, and then once again, there's actually knowing the area that you're fishing, so you're targeting the fish in the right spots.
Yeah, and you're absolutely spot on. I suppose that the best part of it, or the best piece of advice we sort of give to newcomers, like they come along and you'll sort of see that they're fishing and moving things fairly quick. And I think we sort of mentioned that if you think you're fishing slow, go even slower. A lot of these fish, they are predatory fish, but they don't really spend too much of their time sprinting around like the old salmon or the sailfish you mentioned, those sort of things. They'll take things that are in their path, but they won't go too far to chase them. So if you can slow that presentation down, put it in their face for long enough, you'll sort of aggregate them enough to...
Dan, we really appreciate your time on Real Adventures this morning, talking through fishing for brim as well. Dan Mackerel, our Frogley's Offshore Pro Angler, thanks for your time this morning.
yeah, thanks for having me on. Cheers, guys.
Red's Review for Club Marine. Insure your boat with Club Marine, Australia's leading provider of boat insurance. Call and ask for a PDS to see if this insurance is right for you.
It's time for Red's Review, Redmond, because on the back of an 80-year-old man who found a tiger snake that was roughly 1 metre in length in his small tinny. Now, at the time, he was 11 kilometres from land. He was on anchor. As he went to retrieve the anchor, all of a sudden spots the tiger snake. It got us thinking, as much as it is important for capture rates and organising yourself on deck, that you need more than one net. You need two types of nets. You also need some sort of implement in order to remove snakes, because I hate snakes.
He had to call the snake catcher.
And then where are you, mate? Yeah, I'm about eight nautical miles. I'm not going to be able to get out. And he's 80. The poor fella's 80.
He had to drive back with the tiger snake that he threw his jumper over it, and it got scared and hid down the bottom of the boat. He drove in, but then they couldn't get it out because it was under the hull, so then they were going to try and flush it out with water to make it come out. But then all of a sudden, just before he left the boat ramp, it showed its head out again and the snake catcher got it.
That can be a bit of a deal sometimes. When we used to have snakes in the backyard, generally kings or browns, he used to go and chase them with a net.
Mate, your dad, I went fishing with up the Otways here, and I'm like, there's a tiger snake there. He's like, yeah, that's all right, mate, and just like walks past it like it's his mate, like it's his dog.
He thinks he's a snake wrangler.
I was so scared, and this massive tiger snake was right where I was standing. I've got to walk. And I'm not really scared of him, but like, this is massive. And your dad, yep, that's Barry.
Red, we've gone a little off track. Two types of net, why is it important?
Yeah, Red's review this week is two types of nets, because there is so many different things that you need on boats, and the list just goes on and on and on. I believe a net is going to land you and catch you so many more fish for if you don't have one. But like I said, two
makes sense, though, because lifting a fish over the boat, side of the fish's weight, obviously.
Now, here's an example. Whiting fishing, Patrick, we love to catch blue spot flathead. It's a fantastic eating fish. They do pull pretty well when you get a bycatch for whiting, or even if you're targeting them, or even if you're down at Mallacoota and you're landing yourself a meter flathead. Now, you don't want to pull out an extra large net. And now what I mean by that is I'm going to talk a bit about it, but you don't want to pull out a gummy net as such, which we're going to talk about. You want to pull out, it's basically, they call them a simple kayak net, and you want to get it in the large size. And basically, it's a rubber netting that goes around the bottom of the net. You can just dip in the water and lift your flathead up. Pretty simple. Same as squid. I don't net squid.
They're great as well for lure fishing, because you're not having to get things tangled up.
And light leaders as well. You're not going to pop them when you're trying to lift things up. And like I said, whiting fishing, we're using 10 or 12 pound line, and you got a nice half a kilo to a kilo flathead. You don't want to be lifting that with your leader, because it will pop and fall off. So getting yourself a little landing net in your boat is crucial to have down the side for squid, big flatties, even just big anything that's not made for your leader length as such. Yeah. Big salmon, if you get a salmon as a bycatch on 10-pound leader when you're whiting fishing, again, you can lift it up rather than you can get your bait for your gummy trip next session without losing it. And you can roughly get them for around $50 to $70 from Anaconda or basically any good tackle store you'll find them. Now, it's into your hook 'em. Hook 'em's a fantastic range. Nearly everyone has hook 'em nets these days. Hook 'em extra large net, which has an interchangeable handle. So what I mean by that is you can actually, instead of buying a gaff as such and you're going to pay for the handle, you can actually just buy the end piece of the gaff or the net, vice versa, and you can screw it in. You can screw it in.
Really handy.
So that's why it saves you a few dollars. It's on the pricier side. You're looking upwards over $150 for this net or gaff. The reason I say that, interchangeable, it does save you a dollar in the long run. But these hook 'em extra large nets will land you so many more fish. Gummy sharks, school sharks. And once again, I meant to say this before as well, you don't want to bring this hook 'em big net out for snapper. You don't. Snapper, when they come up to the top of the water, you're not trying to scoop in a big gummy shark that's possibly 6 foot long. You want a net with that little kayak net, the large kayak net that I spoke about. A 6 kilo snapper or a 7 kilo snapper will quite often fit in one of those large nets quite easy. And because of the rubber, the hooks don't get stuck in it either. So you can lift your snapper over with those kayak nets as well. But you don't want to get a big net, which a hook 'em net, and dip it in, and all of a sudden the snapper's sitting a meter in this deep net, and you've got to dig in there, and your sinker's wrapped around the side of one of the holes out the other hole, and the hook's stuck in it. So that's why I have two nets, for convenience, and also to catch you more fish.
Budget, what are we spending on each net, roughly, rough cost?
Yeah, between 50 to 70 bucks for that first one, the kayak net, which is the landing net, I like to call it. Like when I say landing net, it lands, obviously the other one is too, but this is a landing net. It sort of sits in the side of your gunwales or on your kayak. You can grab it if you get a snapper, a squid, or whatever it is, where your deep net, which is for your gummies, your school sharks, even your big tuna, your 30-kilo bluefin tuna, which I get offshore, well, plenty of them offshore this year where you wanted to release them, they work really well. So you want to, with the gummies, when they come up with that big, deep net, you want to scoop them up and get them right over the anal fin and then lift up and then grab the tail and then lift them in. They don't break. They're interchangeable with the gaff and you're looking at over 150 bucks, or 150 to 170 with, like I said, the interchangeable handle.
Beautiful work. That is Red's Review.
That was Red's Review for Club Marine. Need insurance for your boat or jet ski? Get a quote from Club Marine, Australia's leading provider of boat insurance. Call or search Club Marine to find out more. Ask for a PDS to see if this insurance is right for you.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. We're in the final quarter now at Redmond. It's time for Red's Tip.
It is, and we're coming into winter. It's about to get bloody cold if it's not already on some days.
She's cold now.
I've spoken about life jackets and the waist ones that I've been wearing, the bum belt ones that go around, which is, they've been convenient for me. So I've done a little bit of fishing by myself as of late, and also
ET wearing them as well.
Is he?
In ET's yep. show, yep, uses them all the time.
Well, when you're fishing by yourself as well, you need to have them. And also launching the boat. I think I did this as a tip a few weeks ago. You need to save yourself some money by not getting a fine. So they're convenient to put on the belts. They are. But as we're coming into winter, something that's well worth purchasing is a life jacket, because they do two things in one. Everyone wears a jacket when you go barrel fishing, bluefin tuna, or even if you head offshore and you're sitting around for a gummy all day in the cold weather in the morning, you want a jacket on. So instead of going out and buying a jacket to wear on the boat, just a random jacket, buy an Axis life jacket. They're around $300. They are bloody good. They are warm.
You can spend that on a jacket anyway, like a good jacket. Normal jacket.
Exactly. So you may as well, it's pretty much 100% waterproof. It's close to 100% waterproof. They've got a hoodie on the back of it. And not only that, they've got the life jacket built in to the chest piece here. So what I mean by that is the little canister sits on your left pec there. And they are really, really warm. So the bum bag is good for summer and whatnot. But for winter, when you've got your whiting slapping you in the kidneys, when you're trying to take it off, your Axis jacket, seriously. And the reason I say Axis is because there's a few others out there that aren't up to standard in my standard. These things last. If mine's lasted two seasons, then it'll last you 20 seasons, because I don't really look after it. It's got whiting juice all over it and probably stinks, but that's all right. But it's, there's Red's tip, is get yourself a really good jacket this winter, and may as well make sure it's a life jacket one too.
The floating gaff. Well, the gaff this week is floating. It's floating just out on the outskirts of WA, but be careful if you're in breach of WA's COVID lockdown mechanisms, which, when I was seen over the last few weeks at different stages.
I hope they're enjoying it too. I'm sorry, we're W. We went through it. They can cop a little bit of it too.
We love WA.
Just because you were in Gold Coast the whole time and missed out on it all.
Police are sending out drones to catch people that are doing the wrong thing. So not only net, like, you're not looking for choppers in the sky. You're not looking for water police on little jet drones. Skis. You're looking for drones.
My auntie listens to the show and she lives in WA, so she's going to... She's going to grill me, I think.
So she should. Thanks for your company this morning on Real Adventures. We hope you enjoyed the show. It's time to go fishing.